for the Cougar Cuties.
No, it's not time for the Cougar Cuties. It's time for the Entertaining Two Ramblers podcast, where middle-aged guys talk Ramblers hoops from a very different perspective. From the class of 1994, I'm your host with the jokes, Dauber. And from the class of 1998, he's the analyst with the attention to detail, Sammy D. Welcome in after a big win.
Whoa, love it when we get to celebrate the W's, the big dubs. Way to bring home the win, Dauber. I know it was all because of you.
Well, you know what I love is our stats are up on wins. Guys and gals like to check out the Two Ramblers after a win.
Yes.
It's very clear in the stats. There's a 30 to 40% bump after wins. I ran into Brian Day from Loyola Athletics, and he said, yeah, I listen every once in a while. He admitted, off the record that he listens after wins. That's what he said, though. That was the thing, after wins. And so every time they win, we get more listeners. So that's what I love. That's what I love. So
welcome, Brian, and all the other representatives of Loyola Athletics.
Anyone who's checking in right now, it's okay if you only listen after wins. Although I have to say some of our entertaining podcasts are after losses, because we're really trying to do something at least interesting after a loss. But boy, we really had to work our chops out this year, though, with all the struggles in the A-10. But hey, how about the last two games?
Really exciting. I know I said the last podcast, I was like, I think Loyola is going to shock the A-10 world and pull out the W. And I was about just a little bit off, but what a game at Dayton. And then to follow it up with a convincing Loyola win against George Mason. That was the quintessential. Everyone looks at Loyola. That's what they see, is that kind of win. And it was great. Oh, it was great to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it was really fun in the stands. It was just a lot of energy. A lot of energy after the Dayton game. A lot of optimism.
Yes.
And then they came out, and leading with defense just was great to see again.
Well, it was great to see that I went back and listened to the pregame for the George Mason game and them talking about the previous game where they had 20 second chance points. They were up and down the court, and Loyola totally, thwarted that this game around, and just good to see that they improved over the previous game, and was really exciting that, they learned from their mistakes at Mason. And so, and then it points to then the last eight games of like, what have we learned, and now what are we going to put into play in these last eight games?
Uh-oh.
Who's uh-oh. The music.
This is sounds like some Wolfpack music here.
Yeah. Hey, Wolfpack Jimmy's joining us this week after the big W.
Holler at your boy, Wolfpack Jimmy.
Wolfpack Jimmy.
Wolfpack Jimmy's back.
So good to have you in. Welcome.
Wolfpack Jimmy in the house. What up, Sammy D? How you feeling? How you feeling, fam?
I'm feeling good. My Coles is not dampening my spirits after the big W yesterday. What are your thoughts on yesterday's win?
Yo. That's what I like to see, just shooting, just bringing it home.
Shooting a three.
Yeah,
that's what you like to see.
I love to see it. I love to see it. I mean, it was good. It was good. It was all good.
And how did the squad think the game went?
The squad was there. Sign girl was there. Sign girl's sister. It was everybody. It was a family affair. It was nice. I didn't see my man Pope Hat wasn't there. And
yeah, the bishop.
Yeah. But, Manish got into it, though. He was first row, and he was celebrating, and he was roasting. He was roasting one player and on the other team, and I don't think it would be polite to say who it is. But anyway, so
Josh Adoro.
No, it's actually Ronald Polite. Anyway, so it was a little joke, Sam. So what'd you see out there? What'd you see out there? Did you see us chanting at all?
I thought I heard the chants on the radio broadcast, but I mean, was there anyone in particular that you were a big fan of?
There was a chant from the Band of Wolves against Ronald Polite. I don't know what they were saying, but they were very into it the entire game. So if anybody knows what they were saying,
Ronnie is rude or what?
I don't remember what they were saying, but they literally, every time he had the ball, it wasn't the air ball because he didn't have an air ball, but every time he had the ball, they said something.
Huh. So well, he definitely had a struggling night going 2 of 11 from the field.
Well, and I think it worked too. I think we got to him. I think we got inside his head. So I totally like that strategy. Let's pick a player. Your partner Dauber. This is one of the strategies he used to use back in the day.
Yes, way back in the alumni gym days. It didn't always work in our favor, but yeah, he always would pick one player and then just ride him through the whole game.
Yep, ride him through the whole game, and it's so funny too because they realize that you're focused on them, and it kind of they're not sure why you picked them.
Exactly.
Why is the opposing fans focused on me? And you can just see that in their head sometimes. Even times they turn around sometimes when you yell their name because they're just not used to it. So it's a great disruptive strategy. I love it. Way to go, Band of Wolves.
Yeah, Band of Wolves.
Shout out, Band of Wolves.
Jimmy, big shout out to the Band of Wolves. Good job.
Yeah, feeling good.
It was the Hall of Fame game.
It was Hall of Fame. It's before my time, you know, Blake Shelton.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did see the legend in the house. I saw Tate Hall and Chris Knight just sort of, you know, slipping around.
Yeah.
Saying hi to people, dabbing people as they walk by. So those guys are tall.
Dauber and I met Chris Knight at one of the alumni functions before the UIC game. And yes, homeboy is definitely, he made us look very short.
Tate Hall's tall too. I'm 5'8". So,
I think he's 6'7" or something.
He's very tall. And I heard you have one of his shirts.
I do have his shirt. And I'm looking forward to hopefully he'll be there for the Dayton game and to which I will be at as well.
Yeah, I heard that. Now, this is the first time that you are coming back to the Gentiles since Clinton was in the White House, right?
Yeah, yes.
I know that from my Poli Sci 201 class.
Wow. I had to do my math on that one. Yes, Clinton presidential era. Yeah, that's was last time that Sammy D was in the Gentile, and then was the Gentile Center.
Right. So.
Now it is the arena.
Well, I got to get out of here. Manish wants to go over to Hallis, get some reps in today, you know, so let's
see. All right. And then I'm assuming you got the twofer at Canes after the big W?
Oh, yeah. No, actually, we were so excited we went to Bulldog. We went to the Bulldog.
Whoa!
Yeah, I know. We kind of splurged a little bit, you know, the Bulldog. So
nice.
It was nice. I saw Golden over there. I think his family was in town or something. So Golden was walking. Golden was just walking on Sheridan Road. I don't know if he was just wanting to be recognized, but he was just walking along Sheridan Road. No entourage or anything.
I remember Bernie Salty walking on
Sheridan Road. One thing I did notice is the Ramblers were out after that big win. They were just walking around. Like I was walking past Gentile Center probably 2 hours after the game. Maybe no, hour and an hour after the game. Jay Quinn just walking by himself.
What up? Did you say, hey, you know, join Jimmy's squad?
Yeah, well, I said, what's good? What's good, Jay Quinn? And then I just kept walking, you know, because I like to give them their space, you know?
Yes.
But he seemed to appreciate it, you know, appreciate you. So,
yeah, all right.
Anyway, all right. Well, you know, the fans wanted me back, and here I am. So play my music.
Play the music, Jimmy.
Get it. Come on. Jimmy. Wolfpack. 2023. Let's go.
Hit the beat drop.
Okay, here we go. Jimmy. Wolfpack. Wolfpack. Jimmy. Wolfpack. Jimmy. Wolfpack Jimmy. All right, see you, Sammy.
All right. That was Jimmy, Wolfpack Jimmy, brought to you by JB Albertos. Thank you for sponsoring his call.
No, brought to you by Shavitz Group.
Oh, Shavitz Group, sorry.
Shafitz.
I got the wrong copy. Sorry.
Shafitz Group. No, what? Who's the guy, the St. Louis guy who talks about himself in the third person?
Yes.
Haynes? Haynes time?
Haynes time.
He's like, it's this big guy, and he does the camera, the selfie view.
Yeah, the selfie camera, selfie video.
Yeah, walking to games, and he calls it Haynes time, sponsored by Shavitz Group or something. Like, he's got his own Shafitz.
Right. Yes.
So I think, yeah, Jimmy needs a sponsor. I think you're right there. So anyway, let's
jump into the games.
Let's roll back the clock. Here we go. And talk about that Dayton Flyers game on Wednesday night, the couch game. You got to sleep in your bed and cry silent tears. It was close, though.
I was reserved for about, 38 or 39 minutes and 58 seconds. And then for that last thing, I jumped up.
Yeah. Now, what did you do when Manimal... Manimal hit the bank.
I almost hit the ceiling in my living room because I was like, whoop.
I knew I was in trouble.
The dog.
I knew I was in trouble in that game. And I'll tell you one thing I never want to be doing during a game. I never want to be thinking about this podcast because the moment you start thinking about the podcast, I feel like it potentially jinxes it. Because I remember when that shot went in, I was like, okay. Next podcast, the bank is open. The Bank of Dayton is open. That was the title of the podcast.
Fifth Third Bank is open.
And then
that is a sponsor of them. So,
is that a sponsor of them?
Yeah, that's on their court. Fifth Third Bank.
Well, we're PNC or something like that.
Yes.
So, anyway, so I was hoping that, and then as soon as it went through my head, I'm like, don't think about the podcast, like, just focus. And then we had to go into overtime, and it was painful. So
but honestly it was painful that they lost, but I expected them to get boat raced in the overtime, and they didn't, and they hung with it. It was still a 2-point game with still 3 seconds left, so it was like in overtime, so it was like they never wavered. It just, it came up a little short.
Yeah, no.
It was awesome to see.
Yeah, it was great to see. Philip Alston, I know we keep singing his praises every game, but it was great to see him show up in a game like that.
Show up throughout the game.
Yeah. Bryce with 15, Norris with 14. I mean, the bench looked good. A lot of contributions from different guys. I mean, yeah, it was great. There's one theme in this game that seemed to we won in spite of in the George Mason game, and it's this free throw stuff.
Oh my gosh!
So
it's ridiculous.
I mean, we shot 10 for 12. They shot 23 for 31. Huh? Like,
yeah.
What they doubled our attempt. Wait, what? Tell me what they did here. They 23.
They made twice as many that we shot.
Oh, so annoying.
So even if we go 12 for 12, or wait, right? Yeah, even if we go 12, I mean, we went 10 for 12, which is quite a feat for the Ramblers. But had we gone 12 for 12, we still would have lost by 9 in that figure.
I mean,
it was just like how it infuriating.
Is this kind of like a Jordan rules thing? Like are our players not getting calls because no one knows who they are or just doesn't seem to respect their game or whatever? Like, I don't get it.
I was watching back the Dayton game because I knew that going in, I almost wanted to watch it with that lens. And I think it's because of our offense. We don't have guys that drive to the hoop or Alston he'll post up from time to time, which he was 4 of 9. So there's where our missing our free throws. But I'm sorry. No. Yeah. He was 2 of 4. I was looking at 3-pointers, but so he went to the line, Braden, knocked down all his free throws, but then Schweiger had 2 and then Jameer and Tom had 1. And it was just like, so those are and ones, but no one else is going to the free throw line. Whereas, with Dayton, the Holmes or Tamani Kamara, their guy that just went off, he went 9 for 11 from the free throw line. Malachi Smith was 6 of 8. Even Deron Holmes was 2 of 6. Now, granted, he missed 4, but he still took 6 free throws. So he's getting to the line. And so we don't have that player that's, where we have multiple players, I should say. I mean, I think Phil is getting to the line, but we don't have multiple players who are driving, making people foul, where we have a lot of shooters. And so with that kind of offense, you're not going to take a lot of free throws, which is somewhat disappointing, but it's just like, we got to be able to sometimes change it up and try to drive and get fouls.
I don't know. I still feel like I see a lot of contact when we do drive inside. Like, I mean, I realize there's times where Norris loses his footing, turning the corner now, and obviously you're not going to call a foul on that. But there, even in the Mason game, there were, I don't know if they're hand check fouls or what, but there were fouls called at different points where I was like, what on earth was that? And then, Mason will get called for a foul that looks like a hand check or looks like, just a little, whatever, that touching during the game. And then, we'll have a guy go down and essentially get clobbered. Nothing. No call. And, I was shocked that Marquise got that call at the end of the game against Mason where he went up and, kind of trucked a guy and
yeah,
I was sure I if you would have gambled with me, I would have bet anything that he was going to get called for an offensive foul. Whoa,
easy. Oh. We're not sponsored by Bet Rivers yet. So,
and we never will be. We never will be.
Hey, the check's big enough.
By the way, that the anti-gambling table was there again. They're showing up at every game, and I'm like, hey, why don't they sponsor the podcast? We'll do the anti-gambling.
Oh yeah, all right.
So I think I should talk to those guys next time.
Okay.
But this Dayton game, boy, it just, I know there's no such thing as moral victories. I hate that term, but it was good. It's back to your, ongoing refrain of just belonging and being somewhere where we're showing up and we're not getting blown out and we're showing we deserve to be there. Now, A10 Twitter, I feel like, is still ragging us a little bit because they look at the record.
Yeah.
But if you watch the last 2 games, I don't care who you are in our league, you have to go, well, they're not going to roll over for us if we go to Chicago.
Dayton, I mean, to our betting friends, Dayton was favored by 18 points going into that game. Like, that should not even, that's Loyola versus Green Bay. That's that kind of spread. I mean, they were favored by 16 to 18 points is what I saw. And for us to be like competitive throughout the whole game, there was really, there was a couple points where they were up maybe 9, And we were up, you know, maybe eight, but it was like kind of that in that sphere. But to be competitive through that whole game and then even to kick it to overtime where we defensively showed up down the stretch was, again, showed the fact that we belong. The Ramblers belong in the A-10, belong in the same court of the team that was ranked in the top 25 at the beginning of the season, was everyone's prohibitive favorite to win the A-10 along with SLU. And so it's like, hey, on their home court, and their home court was electric. I mean, the fans were in it. And that's where I would like to get the Rambler fans, because their student section, I think, rivals ours, but you know,
they're at a higher level than us.
I mean, yes, because their band is much bigger, but it was all the other fans. It was all the 75% of the other part of the stadium that was all into it, where it's like, that's where I think we would like to get.
Yeah. I don't think that if you're sitting in the 200 level of Dayton, someone's yelling at you for hitting on the seats too loud.
Exactly.
I agree. And the cool thing about the Dayton game, was not only do we belong, but I also think this bodes well for the future in the sense that, you know, this is the prohibitive favorite at the beginning of the season, and we're going into a hostile place and playing well. And I don't think anyone, I mean, especially in this, you know, kind of topsy-turvy A-10 year, I don't think anyone was overlooking us. I just think that our record was just looking so bad at some point, people were starting to question.
Right, and rightfully so. And there are a number of games, yes, we totally deserve to be dismissed. But over these last few games, you know, the Bonaventure win, this game, even the Duquesne loss. I mean, yes, it was a 7-minute drought that hurt us. But in all of those games, it showed, you know, that, hey, they're figuring it out. You know, and then the other thing that I thought was really just telling of the Dayton game was that there were a number of moments where we were down, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, and, you know, they went on a 9-0 run. Well, then we responded with our own 9-0 run, you know, it shut them down. And so it was just like, it was a back and forth all the way through the game. And it was just like, oh, okay. Whereas you go back to the VCU game at Loyola or the first George Mason game or the St. Joe's, like, you know, we would make a run and then all of a sudden we would never answer a run. And it was just like the wheels would come off and it was all over. Whereas this game was like, we came back.
Yeah. And now one thing I wanted to point out too is how good VCU is this year.
Yeah.
You know, VCU came and beat us and we were feeling pretty bad about
since.
We were feeling pretty bad about ourselves in the sense that, like, oh, maybe we're not where we need to be. Well, who would have thought they'd be leading the A-10?
I know.
I mean, and they beat St. Louis the other day, and you know, you got the guy from the Midtown Madness podcast wanting to give up his season tickets. These other A-10 fans are so upset that they're losing the VCU, which to me means it's a surprise how good they are. And so,
yeah,
so you look at some
up on everybody.
Yeah, you look at some of the teams that beat us out of the gate. Well, they're doing great this year. So it's kind of like, well, you know, not only did we take a step up in weight class, but we ran into a buzzsaw in VCU almost at the beginning of the game. Or the beginning of the season, I mean.
Yes, no, the season has definitely turned, and it's exciting to see that, we're last place. I'm not saying that we don't deserve that. We have played as poorly as can be, but there's still 8 games left.
Well, talk about who's I don't have the schedule, or I don't have the A-10 rankings right now in front of me. Tell me the top teams in the A-10 right now. VCU's at the top.
VCU is leading with 9-2.
Right.
And then comes St. Louis at 7-3. And then the Bonnies and Dayton are at 7-4.
Okay, so stop right there. Three of our losses right there.
Yep.
Are the top teams in the league. Correct. So we went out against three of the better teams right away and we lost. Okay. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, think about it. I mean, that says something, right?
Mm-hmm. No, and then looking at what we have left, we still play UMass, which is just ahead of us. We still Rhode Island, LaSalle, Richmond, and St. Joe's. So now, the bottom half of the league.
Now, none of those are gimmies, as we found out.
No, I'm not right? saying they're gimmies.
But it is interesting that, you know, yeah, we came out bad, but we also had a tough schedule for essentially a right. team that just entered the league. I mean, and maybe they thought it wasn't tough when they gave it to us, but I heard that we kind of had a tougher schedule than people would have thought for the first year in a new league.
Yeah. No, it definitely is like, oh, okay. But yeah, I mean, the one difficult game, or at least the one game that you're like, okay, that's could be a loss. It would be St. Louis, but the way they're playing now, it's like you go into Dayton and have that kind of performance. I don't see a reason why you could not have replicate that kind of performance, especially because you're playing them now for a second time. It's like as evidence by what they did against George Mason. I mean,
yeah,
they had.
Yeah. What's funny about this, the first time we played George Mason, I was watching at TV, obviously, because I wasn't in Virginia. And I remember being really, wowed by, I think, Ronald Polite and what's the other guy's name? Oduro, right?
Right.
Uh-huh. I mean, he roasted us. And I remember thinking, right. Oh my gosh, this is what it's going to be like in this new league.
Yep.
And then he was made so forgettable in this game, I didn't even know he was playing. And then at some point I went, oh, that's that guy that killed us the first time we played him, and he's doing nothing today.
Right.
I mean, they looked pedestrian against us. I mean, they looked good, but we were playing. Our defense came out so strong in that game. Well, let's put a pin in this for a second. Let's finish up the Dayton game and then go to the win. Right. I want to let's give out some awards. We don't usually give out awards for losses, but we did get to overtime in this game. What do you got for your JB's Giant play of the game? And I think there's only one that can be added to this award. What do you got?
I got Manimal, you know, making a deposit at the bank from three with 0.2 seconds left, nearly causing a dent in my ceiling. That was phenomenal. But you know what, even better than that, or not a better play, but just before that, was Norris finding him. Because it was a moment where it was a scramble mode. You know, what are we going to do? Even Norris hitting the three to put it within three, and then Manimal blocking it down coming down. But Norris finding him and not giving him the handcuff pass where he could make a play. That's your JB Giant play of the game.
And what a great play, just in terms of, I mean, I know it's an incredible shot and, but the thing about it is that was such a validating shot for us being in the A-10. It's like last play of the game, the last play of regulation, we pop that three and make it. And it's reminiscent to Sheldon's game tying shot at the end of the Fairleigh Dickinson game. But people were, kind of roasting us later. Because it was Fairleigh Dickinson.
Right.
But this isn't Fairleigh Dickinson. This is a much better team. And the same thing is happening. And I'm not saying Loyola doesn't want to manufacture all of our wins and all of our close games by this kind of stuff, right? We want to win games by 10 and 20 like normal teams who are dominating. But this just shows, again, we're here. And we can't be overlooked, and even a team like Dayton could easily sleep on us and get stung at the end. And I'm sure I would have loved to have been in the arena when that shot went in.
Oh, it would have been
total crickets. Can you imagine what that would have felt like to see that in your own
Oh my gosh.
Especially since he was doing so well during that game. I mean, yeah, of all the guys to get the ball at the end of the game, that's the guy that Dayton Flyers don't want to see have the ball.
Right. And then, you know, the difficult thing with that is then going into overtime, he gets his fifth foul a minute into it and so then didn't play the rest of the overtime. But yeah, it was. Oh,
wait. He got five fouls in that game?
Yeah, he fouled out.
Oh, wow. Did anyone else foul out in that game?
Tom Welch.
Oh, okay. Interesting. And how many guys fouled out for Dayton?
That would be zero.
Okay, yeah.
They had only two guys with three fouls.
Yeah, you know, Sign Girl, I here's an idea, just as future. You know, you've been kind of joking and roasting teams. You know, George who, and right, you kind of got like these funny little phrases.
It's time to start roasting the refs.
I'm thinking,
counting the fouls.
I think you need to have something about foul counting. You know, and when that foul differential gets up to like, you know, 2-1, hold up a sign, you know, hey refs, what's with this, you know, 2-1? I don't know how you say that funny, but I almost feel like we need something like, is that legal? Can you hold up signs like that? And they're not going to kick you out, right?
I don't know.
I've never seen that happen. Like, I think
almost like the old school, you know, at Wrigley Field way back in the day, they had the Sean-o-meter where they had his batting average, would go up every time he'd get a hit.
Could you imagine though, if like she just had a sign with like a little ref and it was questioning the fouls, you know, I just think it'd be kind of funny. Like, I've never seen anything like that where you're just on referees. Or how about just the refs' names?
No, you can't do that. I would.
You can't do that?
That may be frowned upon in the establishment.
Okay. All right. Well, it's interesting. I'm just thinking outside the box here, guys. But it is kind of crazy when you see these eye-popping. I mean, it reminds me of that game against Northern Iowa last year where it was just like, it was so ridiculous that you're like, are we going to lose because they're sent to the line 30 times?
Right.
I mean,
which I'm trying to figure out why we had 22 fouls for, but yet they shot 32. So yeah, I mean, but just kind of interesting, but yeah, the Dayton game was ridiculous. We had two guys foul out and we had another two guys, Golden and Marquise, had four fouls. So we could have potentially had four guys foul out.
Well, and is there a hammer player of the game for Dayton? I mean, obviously we got guys starting now, like Bryce, who really showed up. Is there anyone off the bench that we just kind of jumped out at you on the score sheet or in you know when you watched the game?
Well, I went back in, you know, again, like I said, I was watching the game on YouTube, and I'll call it out of this is the five, so Welch and Hudson coming off the bench. Cause now they said, hey, we want to get Golden in, get him started. I heard the, Patrick Wallace talking about this on the pregame for the Mason. And we want to get him in and get him started, get him going. And then have the energy guy come off of Welch. And then Huddy came in because both those guys were in foul trouble. And just the yeoman's work that they did, I thought was really, I know, our friend, you know, our brother, Uncle Jeff, he's not a fan of them, but it's like, eight points, seven rebounds from Welch and Hudson off the bench. You know, that's really good, you know, for 22 minutes. And then you add that to Golden, who had 15 and five. I mean, that's 23 and 11 rebounds. I mean, that's 12 rebounds. And I was like, if I get that for my five, that's a win, you know? And so I want to give it to those two guys. And then I even that the double technical play where Tom Welch is like, he wasn't going to let Holmes, you know, kind of get that easy bucket. And so he kind of, it was a hard foul, but it was like, it was a foul. It was worthy of like, that's how I play basketball. It's like, you're going to foul somebody, make them feel it. And that's why I was like, all right, he's not going to back down from anybody. And I think he did the right thing. He's like, holds his hands up, but then he gets hit in the back, and yet he gets a technical. I didn't understand that, but.
Yeah, I mean, I watched that play multiple times because they kept replaying it. I mean, there was this thing where they were kind of hooked together, and he kind of, shed him, and there was a little push, and I definitely see a double technical there, and it looked like the announcers, I don't know, maybe they just don't see it, but I'm pretty sure that Holmes got the technical for saying something. He was like nose to nose with Welch after the little shoving, and says something and immediately gets teed. Like the ref tees right there. So he said something. And and these guys who are covering it, they must not see it, or they're looking from their courtside point of view. I don't know why they wouldn't have noticed that.
Yeah, well, one, I think it was far enough away they couldn't visibly see it. And then maybe their little monitors, they just couldn't pick it up. But it's just like, or they didn't put on the readers to see it. But yeah, the thing I thought was more telling was, okay, if they tech Holmes, which they did, they said that in the, let me see that. Yeah, he got the technical. Was the other guy pushed him in the back, the Amzil Mustafa. Where it's like, that was a blatant, like,
that call was indicative. I think is indicative of our challenge being in the A-10 now.
Right.
I mean, obviously Holmes is a bigger guy and obviously more dominant than Tom Welch. So it's a mismatch.
Right.
And then if Tom Welch stands up for himself, even if it's inappropriate, the other guy doesn't get tagged for it. It just is weird. And then they shoot the shots out of order, which confused everybody.
Right.
Right? Because it was like, what's going on now? And then they get the ball, and you're just like, come on.
Yeah.
And at that point in the game, too, and was that the Ted Valentine game?
Yeah, that was Ted Valentine.
Yeah. So it's like, Ted Valentine, come on, buddy. You've been better. Yeah, do better. You're supposed to be this great, guy who's in the Final Four and you stood up to Bobby Knight or whatever. But it's like, come on. Manage the game at the end of the game. And two big men are bouncing each other at the end of the game after battling. I mean, come on. Seriously. Right. Seriously. I don't, if I were Coach Drew, I would have got ejected, because it felt like we're right there on the doorstep. This is a one possession game, and we're getting this crazy double technical, then a common foul, and giving them the ball. Come on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, after their free throws for their technical, we were up by two, and then they got a jumper with the ball to tie it. And then we come back, we turn the ball over, then they get a three. So, I mean, basically it was a 7-point swing.
If they want to give a double technical, fine, then give a double technical. If they want to call a common foul, fine, but it, at least have some sort of get them under control, take control, assert yourself as the ref, but don't penalize one team over the other. I feel like I didn't understand why they got the ball. Is that because it was a flagrant or something?
At least as it says in the play-by-play, is it's the foul tech by Tom Welch and then becomes a turnover.
Okay.
By Tom Welch.
Here's what I think it is. I think the foul tech by Welch was not a dead ball. It wasn't dead ball. The tech by what's his name was a dead ball. And so the foul tech probably involves the tech, the common foul, and the ball or something like that. Because otherwise, why would they have got the ball back?
Yeah, they shouldn't have, because there was a foul called, and then it must have been, well, but even that, like, okay, they cancel each other out. Then it's like, okay, then it just goes back to the you take your free throws and the ball goes to Loyola.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's super annoying. And that,
I think this is a question for Coach Van. So
I'll ask him next time I see him if he knows, because they might have gotten it wrong. Or what I think, with Ted Valentine and this crew, I think there's a lot of discretion among these guys. Like, I think they could have called that multiple different ways. They could have come out and said, this is what happened, this is what we're going to do.
Right.
And I feel like they chose the thing that really hurt Loyola. It wasn't a fair judgment, whatever it was.
The phrase that comes to mind is, they weren't wrong, but they could have been more right.
Yeah. And so I think it comes down to, and this is where I don't know if we just have to take our lumps and just have to, like, whatever. I also think that having a young coach who doesn't have the familiarity with these guys probably is part of the challenge too. I mean, every league I've ever seen, there's a little bit of an old boys club.
Right.
I don't want to bring other cultural backgrounds into this, but I do think there's a piece of that too. Like, there's these old white coaches and they kind of do their thing, and I don't know. And, you know, you got a guy with a quarter zip and Jordan's on, and I feel like in some ways there's a little bit of that whatever. And I point back to when, you know, Drew got teed up a couple weeks ago and he's yelling, I coached with Tom Izzo, you're teeing me up for that.
Right.
So there's a little bit of a double standard, I think. And whatever, we're not going to get into that. But yeah, what a disappointing sequence in that game at such a crucial time.
Basically, it was 5 minutes left or under 6 minutes left in the game. And so it was like the game is in the balance. But to Loyola's credit, okay, so we hit the free throws. Norris hits the free throw. So we're up 4, 64-60. And then they went on a 9-0 run before our next layup with Phil at 3:30. So it's like, you know, so they went up by 5. We were up by 4. They went up by 5, and we weathered it and came back and still, you know, tied the game at the end. And so kudos to them, because I mean, in all the other games that Loyola had lost up to this point, that was they went up by 5 and all of a sudden now they're up 15 in a blink of an eye and the game's really over. Whereas Loyola, hey, they righted the ship and they tied it and sent it to overtime. So I think that's where you're like, that's a positive sign. It's not a moral victory. It's a positive sign.
For sure. Well, after the break, let's talk about the George Mason game. All right, a little bit of a palate cleanser as we transition to what everyone's excited about. A great showing against the 13-11 George Mason Patriots. So this is a winning team, albeit now, were they 5-6 when they came into the game, or are they now 5-6?
They are now 5-6.
Okay, so they were a 500 team in the league. So this is a... this is a quality win, and the music keeps playing here.
Yeah, and a team that had all of their losses up to that point, I think, were by 4 points or less. So a team that really could conceivably have been an 8-win team. So
now I know you're the analyst with the attention to detail, but let me point out some of these crazy stats in this game.
Point them out.
Who won the rebounds? George Mason. 41-32.
Yeah.
Who shot more free throws? Well, we know the answer to this. It's always the other team. 25-32. We were 17-24. So again,
They made more than we shot.
They made more than we shot. That should be, I can't believe this keeps happening. Now, one of the positives So those are kind of eye popping, those differences.
Yeah.
Big positive for us though, 6 turnovers versus 10. We had less turnovers than our opponent.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Low watermark of the year.
What's that?
That was the lowest turnover number that Loyola has had this year.
Yeah, right? So that's amazing. And then let's talk about another. This is another one that was great. Bench points. We had 20. They had 7.
Yeah. In the last game, that was way to their favor.
Yeah. And the same, we outdid them with points off turnovers and fast break points too. But still, I mean, when you look at the numbers and when you look at their team, how their team shot, you might think they won. Because you look at their starters, you know, there's 4 of their starters were in double digits.
Yeah. And no, they had you would kind of look like they had a good game, but then you look, the glaring stat is they made 16 field goals. 16. They were 16 of 50.
16 of 50. Wow.
I don't care. And they coming into the game were the number 1 3-point shooting team in the A-10. And they could not did anything right. I'm looking up. I wanted to pull up the stats from the last game just to kind of compare. And yeah, let's see. Second chance points. Yeah, they beat us 20 to 13. Bench points. They had 26. We had 6 for the last game. And completely flipped the script on this one, which was so encouraging to see.
Well, we're going to talk a little more about, you know, the play of the game, and we're going to talk about, you know, who was our Hammer Hawes player of the game. And
yes. We got maybe a story time.
Yeah.
You know, Dauber was there. Let's hear story time.
Well, let me tell you, I got multiple stories about this particular game. The first story is I'm not running late. But I went to the game by myself, which was a mistake. Uncle Jeffy was available to go to the game and I forgot to call him. I just wasn't intentional and I had other stuff going on during the week. And so I just woke up and got ready and just drove to the game. But I did think about trying to stop at a Chicago tavern on the way to the game. Because it is a little difficult. It's difficult to park at Gentil, get over to Bruno's, and get back. And so if there was a place I could stop on the way, it would be better. And so I actually drove through Rogers Park, and there used to be a place called, what's the name of it? Now I can't, this is not great for the story.
Lampos?
No, Lampos has been out of business for years. But
yes.
It's on the corner of, it used to be on the corner of California and Tui.
It was like McMullen's? Mullins?
No, it's not Mullins. It's McKellen's.
McKellen's, that's what it is.
And I was driving down California, and not Dodge, because it's in the city. I was driving down California, and had to stop at the 7-Eleven to get cash, and it was shuttered. They had boarded it up, so that was kind of sad that another Chicago tavern is out of business. So anyway, I kind of was like, well, I don't think I decide I'm going to try to stop at Canine's, which is still in business. And I kind of breeze by it. I don't see any parking. So I just keep going. I park at the Gentil and I think, well, maybe I can hoof it over to Bruno's. But as I'm cutting through Damon, the George Ireland pub is open.
Hey.
Now, the last couple times I've gone to games, it's got a private party or whatever.
Right.
So I go down there and there's a nice little group of people. I don't really know. I mean, it's full,
right.
But I walk up to the bar and I order a beer and they say, and I have my cash out and they're like, oh no, it's on the thing. I'm like, what thing? And I look around and I'm like, I don't know what's going on, but they gave me the beer. So I just go, okay, I'll just pretend like I'm part of whatever this is. So I kind of, and then I see there's a little buffet and I get some food. And I sit down with a couple of guys and I'm like, hey guys, what are we celebrating? And it's two Loyola guys. And they're
if
like,
it's free. It's me. I'll take three.
And, right. they're like, yeah, we're celebrating the Hall of Fame induction. And sure enough, I look over, there's Blake Shilb talking to Steve Watson.
Nice.
And then the other person I saw there was a track and field athlete named Marcia Faustin and her family.
Yes.
The other guy, his name's Declan. I forget his last name. And then Mully from Mully and Hanley is there. And I guess
Mike Mulligan.
I guess he didn't get a Hall of Fame, but he got some humanitarian award, which, by the way, I'm in the running for 2024, guys. If you want to give Dauber the humanitarian,
he received the William Finnegan Memorial Award, which is awarded in recognition of outstanding humanitarianism and service to youth through athletics.
Okay. Well, so. You can't give me that award. Give me a different award, guys, but something, an award for me. I would love an award. I'd love to come back. He was there. Mully was there. Declan, do you see who the name is? Declan, his last name? I feel bad now.
Rats, where is it? Where'd it go?
Okay.
Well, I'm sorry. Declan Murray.
Yeah. Declan Murray. And then
ran track from 2009 to 2013. And then
Marcia Faustin and Blake Shilb.
Yes, Marcia Faustin. There it is. Right. Faustin. Okay.
Yeah. And so I just kind of like, this is kind of like a, I don't know, just a luck of the old Irish here. I just walked into the Ireland pub, and the next thing I know, I had like three beers, thanks to the Hall of Famers. Thank you, Hall of Famers. And then,
thank you, Mr. Akaveni. Yes.
It was funny. I was sitting with these two guys. One guy went to Loyola, I guess, for grad school, and the other guy was like not even a Sidewalk alumni. He was just a buddy who showed up.
Oh my god!
So I'm sitting with those two guys. They're older guys. And their names are Jay and James. So I'm sitting with Jay and James, and I go, "Hey, can I get you anything?" And they're like, "Yeah, get another Kolsch and an IPA." And I'm like, "Sure." So like, we're going up getting beers. It's great. So it kind of reminds me of the old.
That's awesome.
Well, it reminds me of the old days. That's the best part about Loyola. As you know, even though we're making it into Final Fours and we're jumping up in our weight class and going to these bigger tournament, we're still kind of Loyola, right? The old, remember at alumni gym, they would just have a keg of Bud after a game.
Yes.
And there downstairs. Was no, like, they didn't even ask who you were. They're like, here's a Bud. It's just kind of like, that's what it felt like. It felt like this is like the biggest small school in the world. Like, it really, the fact that they didn't even ask why we were there, it wasn't a private party either. They didn't block it off or anything. So,
yeah.
So I had a great.
Did you say hi to Steve while he was, you know?
I did not. I mean, he was talking to Blake Shilb, so I'm not going to bother him. And not like he would even know who I am. So I'm just like, you know, so I just enjoyed myself.
Like a name tag. Like, you know,
I enjoyed myself. But here's the key. So then I'm running into the stadium. You know, I can't turn down free beer. So I'm like literally running into the stadium as I'm hearing the tip off music.
Yes.
And where I enter, I'm on the opposite side of my seats.
Okay.
And I think about it for a second, and I'm like, I'd really like to see the beginning of this game, just see what the flow is.
Right.
And after I've had a couple of, you know, kind of bummer games at 202, I thought, well, maybe I'll just pop up at 209 and just kind of grab a seat. Mm. And so I popped up at 209, and of course, we came out, you know, on fire.
Right.
And then I started thinking, can I move back to my seats? I don't want to jinx us.
You're not moving back to your seats.
Because in the DePaul game, I don't know if you remember this, we did pretty well. We did really good in the first half, and then I moved seats, and then the wheels came off. So I stay all the way through halftime, and then I'm sitting near the two Hannahs from the Bathtub Blurs podcast. Yes. They're like kind of a little farther away from me. And I didn't even get a chance to say hi to them, actually, because I came in and like literally sat down and just watched the game.
Okay.
So at halftime, I pop over to say hi to them and kind of make a comment like, hey, I've been sitting over here. I was thinking about going back to my seats, but I'm kind of, I don't want to jinx the team. And they said, oh, there's two seats back here. Why don't you just sit here? So right. I got behind them and I was sitting next to one of the guys on Twitter that follows us, Matthew Rowley, I think is his name. Raleigh, R-O-W-L-E-Y, I think.
Yes,
yeah.
Raleigh.
Yeah, so he's sitting next to me. And then I think I was sitting in Susan Hanna's seats.
Yes.
Who wasn't at the game. So I end up sitting there the second half.
And maybe she would get well soon, Susan.
Yes. And so there was a guy in front of me named Mike, and they're kind of, you know, it's only maybe a half a dozen people, but they're very into it, a little rowdy.
Yes, that's what you want.
Yeah. So I kind of enjoyed it. It's going to be hard going back to 202, although I was at Bruno's later, and a couple of the guys in 202 said, where were you today? Like, because I never made an appearance at my seats. So I felt a little guilty. 202 was like, where were you today? So I don't know what...
It was 209.
Right. So I don't know what I'm going to do. But anyway, I really... I enjoyed being around the people. It is a tougher view, though. There's a reason I picked 202, and it's because the Wolfpack is standing throughout the whole game.
Oh,
so you have a hard time sometimes seeing the baseline, and you definitely don't see anything
on the sideline.
Yeah. So there's passes. You totally don't even know who has the ball at different points. And I mean, it's not horrible, but it's just a little tough. From that vantage point.
But hey, you brought home the win. That's all we care about.
Yeah, so it was fun over there, and then it was fun to pop over to Bruno's after the game, and you know, everyone was there kind of celebrating, and so it was a fun day for sure in Rogers Park. And if I didn't have dinner plans, I probably would have just stayed there for a longer, because it was such a fun atmosphere.
I can totally imagine.
Even at the Bruno's, I met different people who listened to the podcast, and then... The funniest part of it was Krutwig's dad, I guess, comes to games. And so Krutwig's dad is there, and someone introduces me to Krutwig's dad and goes, hey, this is Dauber. He's host of the number one Ramblers podcast. And what was funny about it was he didn't actually take that as a slight. He goes, yeah, they haven't been putting out a lot of podcasts. Like he kind of made a comment that Krutwig hasn't been putting out a lot of podcasts. So he didn't take it as a slight. He just took it as, hey, these guys make more podcasts than my son does. So I thought that was funny.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That's rich. That is actually rich. So how about let's do some awards for the Mason game. I think we've kind of batted around, you know, what our thoughts about the game, and just exciting to see the W and that they played well throughout the game. They pretty much had a handle on the lead, or I want to say George Mason never actually had the lead after they were up 3-2. Let me double check that. I know that was definitely not true in the first half, but,
I'll start with the Hammer Hawes player of the game. For me. And again, this is an award that we give for heart and hustle. This is a guy who typically comes off the bench and makes the most out of their minutes. The guy that I wanted to call out was Jamil Wilson.
Yes. Good call on that.
Yeah. 3 for 5, 2 for 2 from free throws, 2 defensive rebounds. And an assist. So just, you know, a couple turnovers, we'll overlook those, but 8 points off the bench. And that's that kind of combines with Kennedy's off the bench numbers too. He also got 8, was 2 for 5, 4 for 5 from free throw. So both of those guys, solid contributions, coming off. And if you put their numbers together, you know, they really,
16 and 5. I mean, that's,
yeah, those are, that. Yeah, those are great numbers. And they're basically spotting, you know, Braden, of course, had 39 minutes. So they're basically coming in, and playing for Schweiger, or they're or playing for Alston,
or Jalen.
I'm sorry, Jalen. Yeah, right. My bad. So those are just great. You know, those are just great numbers offensively. But just to see Wilson look like just in the last few games that he is getting more of the trust of the coach, and also just really fitting in and complementing what these guys are doing. When he comes in now, he's really, you know, he's really competent and definitely can score. So I it's great to see him kind of tracking. What's interesting is Sheldon Edwards has kind of disappeared, and I don't know if that's because of injury or something else, but I mean, he's on the sidelines cheering. So I'm assuming it's injury or something, right? Because why? I would have, at the beginning of the season, I would have said Sheldon is a higher, is a little higher level than Jermeil Wilson. I mean, he played at Valpo.
Right.
Valpo versus Lehigh. I mean, I know Valpo is not great, but they did play in the Valley. I don't know where Lehigh plays.
The Patriot League.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm kind of curious what happened to Sheldon, but it's cool to see Jermeil kind of coming in at positive times.
I kind of wonder if with Jermeil, because he's older, that might be an issue, or it might be like a reason why he's, you know, getting more minutes. And Sheldon, I think, still has another, you know, 2 years of eligibility.
Does he really?
I think so. I think he came in as a sophomore, but I could be wrong. But yeah, so I think that might be it. Might be what's going on.
I don't think so. I thought Sheldon was a senior, or maybe a COVID senior. I thought.
I don't think he is.
Really?
I feel like. Oh, let me pull up the roster. I think he. Where is it? Yeah, he's only listed as a junior, so he'll still have one more year after this. But I don't know. It's kind of interesting. But I think also too, Jermeil brings in, he's 6'7", whereas, you know, Sheldon's 6'4". It's like it's a length thing with his defense, and so, you know, he can do more of that. You know, he can come in for Phil, who's, you know, similar size, 6'6". And so they can, I would like to almost kind of do a deep dive on, like, you know, what's up with some of the roster, choices. I'm sure it will flush out at some point.
Well, I'm almost wondering if they have found something, though. Just even if you look at these last two games, I know it's a small sample size, but you got Bryce getting double-digit minutes, and you got, what do they call, Marrow sometimes? Sometimes I see him on Twitter as Marrow.
Yeah.
But you got Marrow coming in at 20 minutes in the George Mason game and 21 minutes in the Dayton game. Now, that might have been partly because of the overtime, but still, 20 minutes... you know, 3 for 5 in Mason's game, 2 for 5 in the Dayton game. So yeah, I think maybe there's something to his length. Maybe he's fitting in coming off the bench, and it's yeah. So there's something there. So that's my play of the game. What about you? What about the, JB's Giant play of the game? Is there one that jumps out at you? I'm of course watching it live, and it's hard to, it was hard for me to like point to one play that I thought was the the thing that turned. What did you see?
I don't know. I lost my place here. Here it is. I think for me, it was just a solid game. Like, I know what it was. Was in the, towards the end of the game where the Ramblers were like up. Let me pull it up. Kind of scrolling back, where it was like, it was kind of, here it is. They were up 3, and it was looked like, you know, at 7 minutes left. And it looks like, you know, the Ramblers are going to cut, you know, kind of maybe give away the game, as they have been known to do. And because George Mason had gotten a couple points, you know, in a row. But you had the Austin, you had a dunk by Alston, and then you come back down. He had a couple free throws, and then where was the and then the nail in the coffin, really at the 3 minute mark, was the three by Norris, where it was, they come down, they had just scored, and it looked like they were going to start, you know, getting momentum, and because it started going up and down the court at that, in that juncture, but it was a great assist by Marquise, and it was just like, you knew at that moment, like, this game's over, they're up eight, and they're not going to give this up. And yeah, they basically, they never went, I mean, they got to four, but like, it just was, they salted it away at that point. And so it was just like, it was good to see, because I feel like Norris in the last couple of games, you know, he, although he has double digit points, it's like almost like just forgotten that he scored, you know, 14 points, had a number of assists. And it's kind of like, oh, I mean, because even in this game, he had 13 and three assists. And so it's, you know, not a great numbers, but like, okay. But just like the floor general played 39 minutes, you know, and in the Dayton game as well, you know. And so it was just, it was good to see him at the end just kind of sink a bucket and just like, this is, this game's over, you know, putting almost like, I remember that Indiana State game last year where we had that, you know, ice cold, you know, shout out. And it's like, that's what that kind of felt like, you know. He's having more of those moments as the games roll on, where he's having those moments where he's taking over, or he's shooting that bucket where it's like, he's showing that, hey, the Ramblers are who we thought they were.
Yeah. And he, you talk about him being the floor general, definitely in this game, you know, when you're watching off ball or you're watching, you know, in the stadium, you're much more aware of his, you know, very demonstrative traffic control, waving to guys, pointing, yelling at things. I mean, that's right. Going out, that's going on through the entire game.
Right.
And, you know, and definitely I saw him with, you know, Jay Quinn was in this game quite a bit. And I saw him, you know, kind of directing him at different points, organizing these guys coming off the bench. I saw a lot of that. And I mean, he's been doing that. I did see in this game, you know, we talked about Mason wasn't trapping as much in the backcourt as some of these other teams. I mean,
yeah.
But I did see them rotating who brought the ball up at different points. It wasn't Norris the whole time. So I think they found something there where Wilson, even Phil brought the ball up once or twice. And then Marquise, of course. I saw different guys sort of rotating that bringing the ball up. And then they would get the ball to Norris essentially to start the offense. So It feels like that's a good maybe energy saver for him a little bit, of not having to make him fight through a screen or fight through a trap.
Yeah. Or pressure.
Press. Yeah. It's nice that he doesn't have to fight the press every time he comes up the floor, because I think that's going to take a lot of energy.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So that was cool. Yeah. Yeah. Good for him. I mean, I think, you know, I definitely think it's cool to see his historic average, you know, for three pointers and for just shot selection kind of coming back. You know, he really started this season off cold, not ice cold, like last year, but kind of literally cold.
Yes.
It's cool to see his numbers come back to the sort of the average at the same time that we're starting to play and gel together better. So,
yes.
Great.
Agreed.
Well, hey, who do we got coming up?
I literally had it and then I turned it off. Next up is on Wednesday is the St. Joe's I think it's Wednesday. I want to say it's Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday, February 8th is the Jesuit Jam. So the video was dropped by the Jesuits. you know, dropping rhymes. It was good to see. And then Saturday is against Richmond. And then the following Tuesday at UMass. And then coming home on Friday the 17th against Dayton. So the rematch. Which, by the way, Dobber, I will be there.
Yes.
So I'm Wolfpack throwing out
Wolfpack Jimmy already said that.
Yes. Well, I'm throwing out the announcement. I was like, I'm in search of tickets. And so I'm going to try to do the secondary market, but I was trying to see if maybe some Rambler fans or two Rambler pod listeners may have some, you know, tickets they're not using or know of any. I'd be happy to help them. So I'm actually the hope was to bring my wife, who is a Dayton alum, but she will be on her way to England for work. And so bringing her, my father-in-law along, and then my dad as well. So it's going to be an exciting weekend.
Oh, so you need three tickets for that game then?
Yes, I'm going to get three tickets.
Okay. So we're looking for three tickets to that game, guys. So,
yes.
Okay.
I know it's going to be a tough ticket to buy, but, I'm going to do it because this is worth it. So yeah, excited to be there finally in the Gentile Arena for the first time. Momentous occasion.
Now your father-in-law, he realizes, right? He can't actively root for the Flyers loudly. He has to be quiet, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. He's not going to be like one of those problem guests.
No. He'll make more friends than enemies. Okay, so yeah.
Good. Yeah. All right.
Well, I think Dwayne's going to keep him in check.
Good. So. Good. That's awesome. Well, it'll be fun to see you. I'll be there. We'll be there. Maybe we have a meetup after the game at Bruno's. I don't know. Maybe not.
We'll see. We'll see.
It's so fun. Goes. It's so fun after a win to go out to Bruno's. It's a little more painful. I don't know which game it was. I went to Bruno's after one of, I think the St. Louis game. I went to Bruno's with 5 minutes left.
Yes, that was the game you went to.
I put in a Canes order, walked over, and then watched the last like minute or two at Bruno's. And I didn't feel guilty because I had given it a lot. And really wanted us to do well against St. Louis, and we kind of struggled in the second half. So, all right, well, I think that's it.
Let's pack it in.
Let's pack it in, and I need to find our. Oh, geez, every time I try to finish this
close podcast, out music. Yeah, you need your painter's tape.
Well, the problem is it has a button that goes back and forth between the different sound samples. It really needs a dial, like where I can just turn the dial.
Yes.
So that's part of the problem. Anyway, all right, here we go. Well, you've been listening to the entertaining Two Ramblers podcast, where middle-aged guys talk Ramblers hoops from a very different perspective. For Wolfpack Jimmy calling in. And for the analyst with the attention to detail, Sammy D. I'm your host with the joke, Stobber, saying thanks for listening to the Two Ramblers. And let's get some more wins this week, guys. Go Ramblers!
Go Ramblers!